table or at the usher's table. It's the declaration you gave, very brief, but it's to the point. And one of the points is that, as you notice, we opened promptly at 11 o'clock this morning. We opened the doors at 10:30. During the week, we're open on Wednesday night. The doors open at 5:15, so that you can come in and attend our library, a wonderful little reference library with all kinds of books, naturally, including theosophical literature. If you wish to buy some, just step into the next little room. There's a book table there and a volunteer to help you choose reading. And rack on the wall, there are wonderful pamphlets in there, so talk to the librarian or to the book volunteer at the book table, and we'll explain to you some of these details. As we said, we open at 5:15, and the library closes at 7:15 so that we can begin our meeting at 7:30, because we let out properly at 8:30. We hold a meeting every Wednesday. And as you see, the individuals on the platform here in the library, all volunteers. The most important thing for us to remember for the coming week and is the topic 11:22. Yes, the law of hope. And of course, on this little pamphlet inside, it lists the programs for Sunday. As we said, Wednesday night, we're studying in the ocean of theosophy. On Sundays, you will find listed here the topics that will be taken up. As we said, it's all carried on by voluntary contributions of time, work, and also money. It's our policy always to read the Declaration of the United Lodge. It is very brief, but to the point, and very impressive. Because the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It's loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a true realization of the self. It's a profound conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race or creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to the association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes, and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. We think we covered everything in this announcement, but should there be further questions, always ask one of the volunteers. Thank you very much.
The reading.
All right, we understand there's a reading to come in. Okay. It's a wonderful reading. Please listen. Seek out the way. Seek the way by retreating within. Seek the way by advancing boldly without. Seek it not by any one road. To each temperament there is one road which seems the most desirable. But the way is not found by devotion alone, by religious contemplation alone, by ardent progress, or by self-sacrificing labor, by studious observation of the light. None alone can take the disciple more than one step onwards. The whole nature of man must be used wisely by the one who desires to enter the way. Each man is to himself absolutely the way, the truth, and the life. But he is only so when he grasps his whole personality firmly, and by the force of his awakened spiritual will, recognizes this personality as not himself, but that thing which he has with pain created for his own use and by means of which he purposes as his growth slowly develops his intelligence to reach to the light beyond personality. When he knows that for this his wonderful complex separated life exists, then indeed, and then only, he is upon the way. Now our talk this morning will be Karmic Challenges in Life.
Thank you. That reading from Light on the Path, we think probably brings home the idea of the issue is one of us as thinkers dealing with the condition we find in our own daily life, in our own personality. And we would just like to stress again a few of those sentences. When he grasps his whole personality firmly, and by the force of his awakened spiritual will, recognizes this personality as not himself, but that thing which he has with pain created for his own use, and by means of which, as his growth slowly develops his intelligence, to reach to the life beyond personality. That points to the title of our talk. And this looks like I'm going to read an encyclopedia to you, but it's really just a few pages of quotes in very large print. You will find as you age how amusing that is, that everything in the world that you used to read shrunk when you weren't looking. Now, in order to begin to face these challenges, and think about it for a minute, the challenges that we all already know about. It might be athletic. You have a challenge. You're challenging yourself. You want to run in a marathon, or you want to play great tennis. Or it might be a mental challenge, like chess or bridge. You want to learn these things. Well, what do you need? First, you need to know the principles of the thing that you want to be skillful at. Well, in this endeavor, you would have to begin with the basic, fundamental foundation of theosophy, which we are told is also the foundation of life. And that's three very basic ideas to study and to ponder, that all life is one from one infinite, absolute principle, not a being, not a God as we think of it, but be-ness. And that means subatomic life. All life, from the highest to the lowest, is one. And that life operates on the basis of one universal law. And it is a law that every one of us from childhood has known. It's action, reaction. activity, rest, the law, the great law of cycles. The problem is we accept it on the physical plane. It never occurs to us that it operates on every plane in life, that our moral nature, our moral response is under the same law. So we reap what we sow, and as we sow, we reap again. And the third idea, that learning is the purpose of life, that growth is why we're here. But we have to take it upon ourselves, as we heard in Light on the Path, because what we are facing in our lives is our responsibility, our earning. Good, bad, or indifferent, we brought it to ourselves. We have to accept that, or we can never learn the lesson from it. So we have those three ideas as a foundation, and they do require study and thought, more in the sense of trying to get rid of what we think we already know about life, about ourselves. Many theosophists have to laugh as they find themselves in a different, difficult situation, and they will say, "Oh my God." And then they realize they are echoing a childhood learning that they never have put aside. They've added to it, but they've never put it aside. So there's lots of learning to continue with. But what do you need? Whether it's tennis or bridge, what do you need? You need a coach. It is self-evident. We do it in everything in life. We have a teacher who knows more than we do and who helps us and sees our imperfections and gives us a clue. They don't fix us. They coach us. They give us clues. Now, there are wonderful, wonderful books that we'll come back to briefly. The Tao Te Ching, the Discourses of Epictetus, The Voice of the Silence. There's so many wonderful books to use for coaching. But for daily life and daily living, you cannot beat our old friend William Q. Judge. Letters that have helped me become exactly that for you. But then there's also this amazing little pamphlet, Reincarnation and Karma, and the Aphorisms on Karma. If you really want to do this, take your evolution in your own hands. He is the coach you're going to want. And we're going to give you just a few samples. We only went through a few pages of letters. All these are Mr. Judge speaking. Do all those acts, physical, mental, moral, for the reason that they must be done, instantly resigning all interest in them, offering them upon the altar, the great spiritual altar, which is, if one desires it, in the heart, yet still use earthly discrimination, prudence, and wisdom. And that's a very, very important point. Many times we think just because we're making a spiritual effort, everything should get easier, better, nicer. I mean, we're being easier, better, nicer. Shouldn't everything be equally as kind and wonderful to us? But we find that because we are pushing for growth, the very opposite can happen. Life gets more difficult because we have put a demand upon it. But it's for our good. You can't fix the problem till you see the problem. And our own karma, the reaction from our own actions in past living, will bring us the problem so we can learn. It must be through non-attachment that the soul will burst through the walls of pain. It will be only through a change of mind that the karmic burden will be lifted. A change of mind, where we put our focus. We've often thought a great example of that is if you have a terrible headache or a terrible toothache, and you just cannot stop suffering and complaining about it. Drop a brick on your foot. Where's the headache? Where's the toothache? You don't have time for it. You're busy with that other pain. It's a proof that where we put our mind, where we are focused, there we are attentive and there we are responsive. So it means that in the midst of pain and misery, take a higher position. Turn to some book that has resonated for you and remove yourself from the pain you're dwelling in. It actually sounds harder than it is. And somewhere in the philosophy, there is the expression, none of this is difficult. It's difficult to want to do it. That requires thinking about. Every aspiration higher brightens up the road connecting the higher and lower self. In other words, yourself is a spiritual being, a thinker, and the personality that you have fashioned for yourself. So every aspiration brightens up the road connecting the thinker and the personality. It is not what is done, but the spirit in which the least thing is done that is counted. It's not what is done, but the heart and the feeling that you bring to it. Now, we find this one is very difficult for most of us. I suppose it's because we're Westerners or Americans. Don't be anxious. Don't be maddened. For the law, that universal law, takes no account of our projects and objects, or our desire to be ahead or behind. So if we are anxious, we raise a barrier against progress. We think being anxious is somehow a motor that gets this all moving, but what we're building is a wall against our very own progress. Don't be anxious. Again, find another place to put your mind and heart instead of the anxiety about what will come, what we'll face. Now, these particular books that we mentioned as potential coaches, the devotional books, and you should find the one that resonates with you. It's just like music. One particular tone or phrasing or approach will be the one that feeds your heart, your soul. Find that one and read it every day. Even if you only read one sentence, make it your lifeline. This from the Voice of the Silence. So kindly act, and thou shalt reap their fruition. Inaction in a deed of mercy becomes an action in a deadly sin. One of the few places in theosophy where you will find the word sin. Inaction in a deed of mercy. Then there's, and we don't like this as much as the full discourses of Epictetus, who's a very good friend, especially when you're in trouble, when you've lost all hope for yourself. Epictetus will slap you up the side of the head. He really will. He's very modern. This is from the discourses. Suppose you have a brother or sister who treats you poorly. What difference does that make? There is still a moral imperative to recognize and maintain your fundamental duty to him or to her. Focus not on what he or she does, but on keeping your higher purpose. Whew. And then the Tao Te Ching. There's so many translations of it. You're probably going to have to read 20 of them before you find the one you really like. Because although they're all saying the same thing, they don't say it in the same way. To seek all good, all evil spurn. Love peace and flee from strife. Is that not all the wisest learn? and not from books, from life. So, and you may have your own book from childhood of poetry or something, but find it. Find your devotional book and stay with it daily. Now, again, back to Mr. Judge, and it relates to this. There is a scientific meaning within all these devotional or ethical injunctions. What may seem to others as mere ethics is to him practical instruction. For as he follows it, he soon perceives its relation to facts and laws, which he is enabled to verify, and what seemed to him the language of devotion merely is found to be that of science. But the science is spiritual. Trust what your devotional book says and begin to act as if you already could do what it says. And you will find that you begin to understand this is practical instruction. Now, this is actually a statement by Jasper Niemand, who received the letters that have helped me, that Mr. Judge sent. The true direction is pointed out by the coach or the teacher, and the student is left to clarify his own perceptions, to draw upon and enlarge his own intuitions, and to develop, as every created thing must at last develop, by his own inward exertions. No one's going to carry us into wisdom. No one is going to grant powers or exceptions for us. We are going to earn everything we can, but we have to do it. Now, this very important statement by Mr. Judge: formulate to yourself certain things as true, that you feel to be true, and then increase your faith in them. Because faith is a power. It's a power that's resonant within the soul. And then a warning, but also a nice hope. We may meet in our lives a person who has a remarkable effect, either for good or ill, because of the affinities engendered in past lives. So we didn't meet our friends by chance or our adversaries by chance. And these sad statements of Mr. Judge, those who know Theosophical history know he suffered a good deal from the action of others. Those moments of intellectual gloom are the moments when I am influenced by those ignorant ones who are myself. Shall I not take heart, even when a dear friend deserts me and stabs me deep, when I know that he is myself? We are apart from no one and from nothing. And then from the aphorisms on karma. That's another good thing to carry with you and look at one a day. Number 19, changes may occur in the instrument during one life so as to make it appropriate for a new class of karma. And this may take place in two ways. A, through intensity of thought and the power of a vow, and B, through natural alterations due to complete exhaustion of old causes. But then remember, if nothing else, at least we will die out of these conditions. We will go and have a rest and before we come back, and if it was a physical condition, it marks the end of it. That's finished, done. 27, measures taken by an ego to repress tendency, eliminate defects, and to counteract by setting up different causes will alter the sway of karmic tendency and shorten its influence in accordance with the strength or weakness of the efforts expended in carrying out the measures adopted. leave the rest for question and answers, but a reminder that we call them challenges. We should just call them payments. We are being paid back by life for the good, the kind, the unselfish we have done. And every one of us knows we have things that come to us and things that we possess as natural skills we don't deserve any credit for in this life. We didn't do anything, and here we have this blessing. Equally, we have the opposite. We have griefs and pains, but they're for a purpose. We are to question them, look at them, see if we can understand what in us needs fixing. No matter how it appears to come to us, it is ours. That's why it comes. Yes.
Even if we don't make the effort to find a personal coach or a life coach, or we don't find ourselves in that kind of relationship, would the law of karma itself be our teacher?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, if we gave the impression that you were to go out and find, quote, a coach, a life coach, we didn't mean to do that. It's a metaphor for the devotional books, for Mr. Judge's book. Our karma brought us to these ideas. Then what we do with it is up to us. If we take it to heart, if we start using it, that is our coach. Yes.
But if our karma brought us here, you had mentioned that we have to have a strong desire for this. So we are here, as you said, maybe we don't know why we're here. Maybe we're just drawn here
mm-hmm.
by the ideas and so forth. How do we make that a living power?
We're not just drawn here by the ideas. We're drawn here by our past use or attraction to those ideas. In other words, just like the dedication to the secret doctrine, it was all written because the minds and souls were hungry for it and demanded it. So you're here because of your own need for this. So how do we make it a living power? How did we learn to ride a bicycle? How did we learn to drive a car? By fumbling and stumbling and learning as we were going. Because of the fact that we are spiritual, and these are spiritual writings, they fire us up as we begin to study them. There's a wonderful pamphlet written by Colonel Bowen, who had studied some with HPB, and he wrote down his feelings about this is how one should study the SD. And she told him he was absolutely right. It's not to be digested like a history book or an encyclopedia. It is more like an encyclopedia or a dictionary. You can go after things thematically. But the point is that it changes you. It is not an intellectual exercise. It awakens your intuition. And when that is awakened, there's no stopping you. Your own spiritual hunger will make you continue this. Yes?
Early on, you had spoke on a personality. Could you give us a brief idea on what the theosophical outlook is, what they think of the personality? What is the personality in the theosophical thought?
Well, first of all, the very word itself, persona, comes from mask. It is a mask that the soul or the spiritual being, the thinker, wears in incarnation. Wears it so tightly and so well that we as thinkers believe that's what we are, separate personal beings, which is a delusion. And studying like this will at least give you moments of suspecting that it is a delusion, that you're caught up in, well, as they put it, that you're asleep instead of awake. But the personality is made up of the tendencies and the thinking, the activity, the feeling of past lives. It isn't the immediate past life. It's not a straight line. It's more like a formula. So you have tendencies that you have to work with and through, for good or for ill, in your own personal nature. And that is what that bundle that you receive when you come out of that rest state after death, you receive the personal characteristics that you're going to have to deal with and live with. It is a field of operation. It is delusional, but it's a necessary exercise for the mind being to live in those conditions. Yes?
We recall a story a long time ago of a group of...
I think you'll have to speak up.
A group of people walking along the road, listening to a teacher who was conversing with them. And he looked back and he saw a little boy with a vicious dog hanging on his arm where the dog had sank his tooth. Or his teeth.
Oh, hurry, finish this.
And he was asked, well, what are you doing with that dog hanger? Oh, he said, it's my karma. Now, it would seem that we use that possessive term, my karma, maybe at the wrong place, because your karma is also my karma.
I don't have a dog on my arm.
Therefore, we take possession of it, and therefore we sit there and we let the dog hold on without learning why the dog is hanging on and how we can get rid of it. We're not victims. They are teachers, are they not? So the use of the term my seems to...
I was bitten by a dog very badly when I was a teenager, and the only thing I learned was stay away from dogs that look like that. Sometimes we're slow to learn the lesson, but the point is, and I can't find my quote, that here it is, karmic causes set in motion must be allowed to sweep on until exhausted, but this permits no man to refuse to help his fellows and every sentient being, which means the child should be helped, but the dog should be helped too. So we can't just accept if we see someone suffering and we're present, that's part of their karma as well, that we're there and could help and could do something. I think it's in the voice where HPB says if you... refuse to jump in and save someone because of your own fear, that you're literally setting up a difficult cause for yourself when you could at least get someone else to come and help. You had your hand again on?
Well, it ties in with all this. In the very beginning of the presentation, the three fundamental ideas were mentioned, one of them being the law of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that law is the fact that our progress is checked by karma.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the law. So our question is then, could we possibly evolve without karmic challenges? Are they necessary?
Could we do anything without karma? Cause and effect. Could we do anything? Think about it. Physical science has done amazing, awesome, wonderful things, all based on that law. So, of course, we are checked by our karma, because we're trying to think of an analogy in school. You can't get to a certain grade, pass on to the next grade, until you have accomplished all of the things that form the basis for that next grade. And there, we understand it was, and this might be a rumor, that the Philadelphia school system was notorious for passing students on, even though they didn't have the equipment to manage the next grade. And it took a long time for that to get returned to the right way. Yes.
That concept is called social promotion, that the child stays with its age cohort and moves on. It's not unique to Philadelphia.
Really?
Many districts practice that, and frankly, it has a fiscal basis because it's cheaper to keep the child moving than to have a bulging second grade class where you have to hire an additional teacher.
And that's obviously what we want, is to keep the child moving, not to have the child educated.
And frequently parents are behind the social promotion because they don't understand that mitigating karma in some circumstances is actually crippling.
Yes, but being without the foundation you need is also crippling. They have discovered that the generation that was brought up on self-esteem, where everybody was getting a sort of prize just for showing up, that it's had a detrimental effect on many, many people, that it didn't do what they thought it would do. You have to have some self to be esteemed about, really. Yes.
And the other thing is, even the act of saying, well, I'm not going to do anything, you're already setting up reactions. That's an action.
Yes. Yes. And it proves that we always have a choice. If you can choose to not do something, you can choose to do something, to face it. Yes.
Well, one thing that we haven't really looked at
are... Speak up, please.
Well, two things that we haven't really...
If I tell you to speak up again, will it turn to three? No, go ahead. Two things.
Well, they're kind of together.
Okay.
We haven't looked at will and desire, because in regards to karma, you know, the karmic lessons, and it was just mentioned we have choice. We have to have this awareness that we do have that choice, and the whole idea with behind will stands desire. In order for us to change the reaction to our karma to improve our future lives, will and desire definitely.
Okay, but the very first thing you mentioned, and it goes in line with the statement made just before that, we know we have a choice. We always know we do. In order to say, I won't do it, or I refuse, that is admitting I had a choice one way or the other. We always have that. Yes.
Well, there are so many people who are kind of stuck in their lifestyle, and a lot of times they don't know that they can choose to break out of that. So it's the idea of their desire.
Yes, we're coming to
that.
But we do not agree with you. Even the person who is the most fundamentally stuck in a certain issue knows that they're choosing to stay there. And we have seen this in people who've had opportunities. They're in a horrible home situation, and they've had opportunities to break away from it, and they have chosen and said it out loud. I'd rather stay here and be miserable because it will make him or her miserable. So it's our desire. What is our desire? The person who is responding that way doesn't want to be free. They want to hurt the other person. They want to punish. Therefore, they will go through anything as part of that. That is a karmic situation, and the person needs to step aside. But you're right. They no longer see themselves as a being of power, of having chosen and created this. Now, what do we think will happen as a result? They continue to go through with that problem. They die in that situation. What do we think is the resultant of that? What happens to their will and their desire? Yes.
Well,
perhaps it's only part of the answer, but in the last part of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, that which you and your folly choose not to do, in the future incarnation, out of necessity,
you will do it.
Now that necessity or that is really our will, but it's not our personal will.
Right.
It's the will of our spiritual nature.
That we have to learn this.
To situations where we apparently have no choice. We have to act in a certain way out of necessity.
Yes?
He said it better.
That is a lazy choice.
But clever.
Yes.
Well, it seems that as humanity in general and in particular, we resist change.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to change, no matter how bad it is. We don't want to change. So that inertness in our nature is something that we just have to recognize. You know, it's like the three fundamentals. It's like Arjuna in a chariot, you know. He didn't want to fight. He didn't want anything to change. He knew all these preceptors and so forth. So, you know, it's change. It's the basic fundamental thing that we can count on, and that's the one thing that we resist.
Mm-hmm. Change and fear. You know, in following the advice of these coaches in life, meaning the devotional books, the spiritual teachers who have left us a map, but in following them, we come to realize the importance of quiet thinking, meditation. We have to retreat from this in order to see that there is another way, another possibility, another self, a self that is calm and centered and can look on this. Then the difficulty becomes bringing that back into this situation. It would be wonderful if we could all stay in the meditative state, if we could just escape from all this. But it's our mess. We made it. We are the only ones who can fix it. And when we say we're afraid of change, we wouldn't mind if someone came along and gave us a magic pill and fixed all our problems. We wouldn't mind that a bit. We wouldn't mind change like that. Yes?
So in a certain sort of way then, a lot of times we may be in a comfortable pattern and deceiving ourselves into believing that it's of a sattvic quality when actually it's of a tamasic quality, and we need to get moving and mobile and do something and act out in a rajasic way to move from tamas.
Right, the qualities.
Establish on a higher quality.
Right, the action. We need to take action at times, but what you spoke of, the being. Well, deluded in the idea that because we're at peace and at harmony, that we're in a higher condition when we might not be. We think that's a very hard one. We think it's easier to discover that you have the emotional nature of a 2-year-old or you have a lousy temper when things go wrong. Those are easier compared to that condition. But how do we get out of things? How do we do it just in life, period? Yes?
Well, there comes a point when we are very aware that that thought or word or act is not really me. I am more than the worst thing I ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And that awareness is a break, a detachment, and a reminder that truly we're the perceiver. We're not the persona.
Right.
We're not the doer. And that's a beginning point.
Oh, it's a huge beginning point. If we could stand on that for an hour, I mean, imagine all of the things that we could see and the ramifications. If you just spend a day going, well, I'm going to watch what I say and what I do and how I feel right after I say and do them, because we might find ourselves saying something that we had said, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to bring that up. I'm not going to mention it. And immediately we mention it. But instead of criticizing ourselves or faulting ourselves, we become a scientist. What prompted me to say that? What was I after? What was going on? This personal nature is a horse that's out of control. I'm supposed to be controlling the horse. Now, what went wrong? What am I not doing? It's my nature. I should be able to take control of it. Yes?
There were a series of old adages, and I probably can't remember all of them, but perhaps others can help, that as we begin to be better able to observe the personality, and we say something and someone else says something and our reaction is anger, immediate reactive anger, then we can be pretty sure that whatever was just said to us was the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to come back around and look at it. But if we respond with laughter, just a reactive, oh, that's really funny, then we know that that wasn't something that was a trigger and it's off base.
You're quoting Epictetus.
But sorrow is a whole different response.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what that sorrow is the message for.
Well, the first two were definitely a quote from Epictetus, who says, if someone criticizes you and it upsets you, they've given you gold.
Mm-hmm.
Take it and ponder it and see if you can find how to fix whatever it is in yourself. If, however, you laugh at it, forget it. It has nothing to do with you. Well, what would we think would be the correct response to sorrow? We would think reflection, trying to understand the other's sorrow, comparing it to sorrows we have known ourselves, and realizing how powerful that is for growth. Because we slow down, we question, we ask, whereas the joys in life, we just, well, that I deserve that. Yes. Okay.
In letter 4 of the letters that help me, Mr. Judge talks quite a bit about sadness and sorrow in life, and he says that it's a very common experience of the student as they grow on, because their knowledge, their understanding of the obstacles, the challenges they become more aware of.
Right.
But he says the remedy for that is knowledge that there have been those who've gone through the very
and gone beyond
we
it.
Are and have transcended them. And
you know that story of the woman who went to the Buddha hysterically crying. Her child had died, and she wanted him to fix it, to change it. And he said that he would if she could find, you know, something, a nut or a seed from a house where death had never touched. Sorrow and pain and difficulty are a part of life. But it's funny how it doesn't really bother us that much if we're in an athletic competition. We know that we have to push ourselves, that pain is part of the process of stretching the muscles, of going beyond where we are. Yes?
In a voice, it describes through this first gate this this
little
mansion,
louder.
This mansion of death.
Mm-hmm.
It's a state of consciousness that we go through, and that and there are other gates. There's it's a road, but we enter on it here.
Yes.
And here's where we have to begin.
Well, the problem is that and it's happened in every religion and philosophy. What you're given is a map. A map is not the journey. A map is your guidance on the journey. You have to make the trip. Well, we think if we just memorize the map and we know all the main points, then we've done all the work. There isn't anything more to do. But it is self-induced and self-devised effort. There is nothing in theosophy that says, all right, you have to, by this point, be well established in understanding the three fundamentals, and you have to be able at this point. No, there is none of that. It is in yourself the realization that, you know, there aren't that many of us, meaning souls looking to serve humanity. And therefore, we have to work. We have to. We can look around, look just in our own city, and we know how desperately humanity is starving. And it's not going to get better on its own. It requires souls at work, sending out hope and making an effort on their own to grow and to learn. Yes?
I'm sorry.
No, I called on you.
Are all karmic effects...
A little louder.
Do all karmic effects come to us individually as the lessons that we should learn, that we should go through them in order to learn a lesson? Life seems to be a learning experience, mm-hmm. and all that comes to us personally, it would seem something that we need to learn ourselves, irrespective of how it comes or who it comes through.
Right.
There is a lesson to be learned. And if we do that, it would seem that we could map our own life step by step in following karma and finding out what it is we should do.
Mm-hmm. And it says quite clearly in the philosophy, when the lesson is learned, the problem ceases. Because obviously you are above that now. So it is personal in that sense, but it can also be collective. But we are the ones that have to do the work to follow that map and make our own map. Yes?
Well, if Clark Gable truly loved Scarlett, while she was beating him on the chest, abusing him, if he had just simply put his arms around her and said, yes, I understand. In many situations, karma does teach, and it opens up wide doors, and then we can go back to school. We hear the term love conquers all things. But it seems that it may not be something to punish us, but to train us to be the better able to help and teach.
And clearly, we have to teach ourselves in the process. It isn't that we're here to save anybody else. That isn't it. We're here to share what we have learned, what works. And obviously, as civilizations, we've done that. We remember as a child wondering what things were like in other parts of the world. Did they have windows? Did they have doors? Or was that just something that happened over here? We are collective in that sense. The agriculture across the world is the same. The canning of food, the preparing of food is the same. Different spices because of what's been growing there, but it's all one and the same method. In personal relationships, there is nothing more difficult than that. And that is what the Gita is really about. It's a fight within a family. And that's personal relationships. Arjuna did not want to bring harm to his family and to his family members, and yet he had to fight them. Well, we are told by Mr. Judge that it's really a psychological what we're fighting are the characteristics within ourselves, the things that we have to face and overcome. And that means we are both Rhett and Scarlet. And we have to learn that we have written the story, we're starring in it, and we're directing it. We have to learn that. Once we get a clue that that is true, that we've stepped back just enough to see it, we never will forget that, and we'll never get over the embarrassment of realizing how stupidly we act, even though we already know that. I am a spiritual being. Look how stupid I can be at times. But that isn't the issue. The issue is, if I keep looking, I'm going to find the clue that will help me change that behavior. Yes?
In the aphorisms of karma that you mentioned, one of them is that there are three classes of karma.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those classes is that our karma is held in abeyance because of some other karma that is currently obstructing it. So we need to look at these karmic challenges in a different way. It's not that we keep facing necessarily one challenge after another. We may. Things do not have to automatically get more difficult, because with each success, there may be a tremendous amount of growth that follows in proportion that makes those new challenges easier for us in ways. We're not growing through the process.
Mazel tov. A blessing on your head, it should happen to you that way. There are situations where things just do keep getting worse, but it might just be a test of our sense of humor, of our sense of justice, of our sense of maturity. So yeah, we go through many things that others know nothing about. You can read instances throughout history, the dark night of the soul. We wanted to end with this. It's from Judge's letters again. If we live in our hearts, we soon prove that space and time exist not. Nothing foreign to masters enters there. Our faults are not there. The heart reaches him always, and no doubt he replies. He does, I know. He helps us while he leaves us to ourselves. Meeting is adjourned. Martin.